You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along to the Punt Podcast from William Hill. It's another big weekend of football action. We'll be talking best bets in the Premier League, Football League and around Europe. It's Mark Walton in the studio, and we'll be shortly joined by football editor of the Daily Mail, Ian Ladyman. We're going to be talking to him about Manchester United and all things seemingly going wrong at the Premier League's most successful club. We'll also hear from Pete Farries, Gav Pushalovsky and Al Ross, providing us with their best bets in the Championship, League One and League Two respectively. And we'll have Alex Dunn joining us for his European nap. But first, it wouldn't be a Punt Podcast without this man, a man whose betting prowess is only matched by his immeasurable character. It's Derek McGovern. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How's things?
Yes, very well, thank you. Looking forward to this weekend, of course. Another big weekend of Premier League football, and you've got the best bets for us, haven't you?
I have indeed, yes. And how could you not look forward to a Premier League weekend that involves Huddersfield v Cardiff? And nail biter.
Yes, we've got that and more to look forward to, as they tend to say on TV shows. We're also joined by a man from the William Hill Trading Room, back on the podcast this week. It's a very good day. It's Andy Excel.
How good are morning.
You, Andy? Are you well?
Good, thanks. I'm surviving, yep.
Yeah, a few holiday antics may have derailed you a little bit, apparently.
Yeah, I'm ailing back. Aging man shouldn't fall over on stairs.
At least you got the football to distract you this weekend, if nothing else.
I'm convalescing at home, so I shall actually get to watch some in some relative peace this weekend.
Oh, very good. There's a silver lining to every cloud and all that. Right, let's get stuck into it then. We'll get stuck into the matches. First game of the weekend comes from the Molyneux. It's a 12:30 kickoff as newly promoted Wolves welcome the champions at Manchester City. Wolves are 9-1 in the betting. The draw is 5-1. Manchester City are 1-4. Welcome to you first here, Derek. Wolves, of course, drawn with Everton so far and lost at Leicester. Man City have made serene progress already in the Premier League this season. No Kevin De Bruyne, but that's not stopping them. Beat Huddersfield just 6-1 last weekend. It's looking like the same old Manchester City, but in an interesting quirk, the last two seasons, the previous campaign's championship winners have actually beaten the Premier League champions. That happened when Burnley beat Leicester in 2016-17 and Newcastle overcame Chelsea 3-0 in 2017-18. It looks a little bit more unlikely this time though, Derek.
God, that's an incredible statistic. It does look unlikely. People are talking about a cricket score in this game, and I think Wolves will be glad to escape with it as long as it's an England one. Even the referee, Martin Atkinson, has requested an abacus for this game. City won 6-0 at Watford last season. They won 4-0 at Swansea, so it doesn't matter if they're away from home. They still pile on the goals. But I've just got a feeling about this game, you know. In my eyes, although they haven't started the season brilliantly, Wolves, I reckon they could well be the best championship winners to come up. City are probably the best Premier League champions as well. But they did throw a few howlers in when least expected last season, City. I'm thinking of those games against Huddersfield, against this very opposition, Wolves, in the League Cup last season. It finished 0-0. Wolves were one of the only five sides to keep City goalless in 57 matches they played last term. So, you know, there's something to draw comfort there. Even though Wolves haven't started the season that well, they've created a lot of chances. If they just had a little bit more of a clinical finish, they could have had a lot more points on the board. They've caused a few upsets in the past as well. They've beaten top-flight sides. Man United they've beaten twice in the last 10 years. Liverpool, of course, under the dark days of Roy Hodgson. They've beaten Chelsea in recent years too. I don't think they'll go to Molyneux against City and be frightened. I think there's a lot to come from this Wolves team. I'm trying to think of a good way of finding any value in this game. It wasn't that long ago we used to live by the adage, never back teams away from home at odds on. Well, City are 1-4 in this game. I mean, that adage is long since dead. But 1-4, I know they're brilliant. But come on. No, I can't touch that. I'm going to go, both teams to score, by the way, is even money. I think that's nailed on. But I'm going to go for Wolves on the handicap here. I'm going to go for Wolves with a two-goal start. And you're getting to backable prices when you see that kind of thing. And I like the look of that.
Yeah, it's 19-20 for Wolves plus two goals on the match handicap. I can see where you're coming from there. First of all, I just think 9-1 for any Premier League side in any game is too big. It's, you know, it's 90 minutes. It's not like they're taking on a League One side here or anything like that. And like you say, Wolves, arguably the best team to come up from the Championship in a number of years. They've spent a lot of money. It's almost like the battle of the money bags this game, or certainly the super agents. Where's the money going in the trading room, Andy?
Well, being at home, I haven't seen where the money's going. I would suspect
But Man
City, yeah, she's getting it all, yeah. Man City, I suspect they'll be in just about every accumulator going this week, and that's really, we've talked about this before on the podcast, that's why you get a 1-4, because they're the first ones up. They're going to, on the fixture list, they're going to be in every accumulator possible, so we'll be desperate for them not to win. Derek's beaten down our well-trodden path from last season about Man City away from home, take the home team with a handicap, which is generally a good thing. I think he's talked about the both teams to score as well, which I wouldn't put people off at around even money. And I'm a little bit with Derek as well. I can't see Wolves winning, but I could see some interest in the draw at maybe 5-1. But yeah, we'll be desperately hoping City get turned over in some way, shape or form.
Any other ways into it than any teams, any players, sorry, caught your eye? I mean, Sergio Aguero, often the man to talk about when it comes to City goals. He's in a rather illustrious group of players to have scored three hat-tricks in a calendar year, if you like. Only two players have scored four in a calendar year. Can he get on the score sheet again here? Is he the logical way to try and boost the price about City if you are siding with them?
Well, he's the logical one. I mean, it's interesting. He's one of those players that, if you ask people to put together the greatest Premier League players ever, I don't think he'd ever get a mention. But he's done it for so many years that he should get a mention. And yeah, he's a logical one. If you wanted to put him in and City to win, that would boost your price a bit. But yeah, it's just going to be, please don't City win, and then we'll probably be all right for the weekend.
So William Hill, fingers crossed, or having their fingers crossed, that City don't win. We do have enhanced odds on this market, though, on this match, sorry, and Sergio Aguero does feature in those. It's for him to score, City to win, and both teams to score. That was 27-10. We pushed that out to 3-1, and I quite like the look of that. I think Wolves are perfectly capable of getting on the score sheet here. I think both teams will score in that situation. Aguero to score in a City win, therefore, and you're getting 3-1. Derek, could I tempt you with that?
Yeah, you can. Aguero's, I've been banging the Aguero drum for many seasons. Of all the strikers who've played in the Premier League, when he gets a chance, when he's like, you look at the chance, you think he's going to score. I've never felt as confident about a player scoring a goal when given a chance as I do about Aguero. I think he's a sensational player yet, so I wouldn't put anybody off that.
So, overriding opinion then before we move on would be that we expect City to win. They're a bit short, but we're thinking that Wolves won't get thrashed here, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. It'll be a closer game than the odds imply, is what I'm saying. You can never back against City these days because they're just the head and shoulders, apart from when they play Liverpool. But don't write off Wolves, even though the results haven't gone their way so far this season. There's a lot more to come from them.
So Wolves are up against it, according to the betting. Heavily odds on Manchester City in the Premier League opener on Saturday. That is at 12:30. We do have a 5:30 televised game as well. Liverpool take on Brighton there, and Liverpool similarly short. They're 20-3 on, which is a price I've never said before. The draw is 7-1, and Brighton are 16-1. We'll come to you first this time, Andy. Given what Brighton did against Manchester United, are they unconsidered too much here at 16-1? Is that price too big?
It's not too big because it does reflect how good Liverpool look at the moment. But I'm sure Derek could chirp in at some point and say that Liverpool are capable of throwing a bad one in it, and they've done it for long enough now that it's possible to happen. But you couldn't see anything but a Liverpool win here either. It's, you know, it's the start of the season where a lot of the big teams have got off to a good start. It's a bit fearful for us every weekend at the moment that all the main boys are going to win and we're going to end up counting our losses rather than our wins. I can only see Liverpool here, probably by a couple of goals.
They had a couple of goals, didn't they, against Crystal Palace last time out, and have obviously scored a fair few against West Ham on opening day. Is this the best Liverpool you've ever seen, Derek, coming into the season? Everything seems settled. They've made good signings. They've strengthened the areas where they were weak in terms of bringing in a good goalkeeper and such. Is this Liverpool's best chance at the Premier League for some time?
No, because they've got Manchester City in it. I mean, you know, to take Manchester City out and Liverpool could probably win the league by a long distance. And it's not Liverpool's greatest ever team, no way. I mean, I'm talking about the teams of John Barnes and Peter Beardsley in 1989 team, you know, around that. You know, this team wouldn't live with them. But they're a great side, no doubt about it. And I thought at the beginning of the season, on a World Cup year, when players were not exactly fully flying when it opened the season, there might be mileage in taking on the big team, but it hasn't turned out like that. In two matches last season, Liverpool put 9 goals past Brighton. 5-1 at their patch and 4-0 at Anfield in the last game of the season, when really Liverpool should have been. I know there was, you know, problems with the Champions League qualification and so on, but they should have been looking to the Champions League final, and yet they battered Brighton 4-0. So, you know, it's hard to look past them in this game, even at these kind of odds. Brighton are winning plaudits, but they only put 3 past Man United last week, so they can't be that good. I've looked high and low for the value in this game, and I've come up with one obvious conclusion. Paying £60 for a ticket will not be value. I think it'll be a very one-sided game. You know, sometimes when you look at on the website, the Hills website, and you see the your odds trending and all that, and there's a price that catches your eye. And I like this one. Over 2 goals, over 3 cards, and over 10 corners. I noticed that in the earlier game, the game we talked about earlier, that was only 5-1. This one is 8-1. Over 2 goals, which is bound to happen. Over 10 corners, which generally happens. And you're just looking at over 3 cards, which, you know, more often than not, I like that 8-1. I'm going to have a little fun bet on that, because I hate matches where you're getting a team that's about 1-7. I can't find anything to have a bet on. So I'm going to go on that trending your odds market.
Yep, just go to the your odds section on the William Hill website. You'll find it there. Over 2 goals, over 3 cards, and over 10 corners is 8-1. If you fancy anything yourself, you can, of course, request it via your odds. Just tweet hashtag your odds to @WilliamHill on Twitter, and they'll try and price that up and put that on the website for you as well. I should have clarified as well, by the way, Derek, when I was talking about best Liverpool side, I meant in the Premier League era, obviously not as good as those European Cup winning sides before that, but I'm in danger of straying into the football didn't exist before the Premier League brigade there, aren't I? entirely by accident. We do have enhanced odds on the game as well. Firmino and Mane both to score. That's happened on a number of occasions in the past, of course. 3-1 out to 7-2. We've also got Mohamed Salah to score, Liverpool to win, and both teams to score. That's 3-1. I suppose the question there is whether you fancy Brighton to get on the score sheet. And if you do fancy the big upset, Glenn Murray and Mane, who scored against Manchester United, to score here, and Brighton to win. That's all the way out to 33-1 now. Brighton manager Chris Hughton, by the way, is aiming to avoid another Premier League defeat against Liverpool. It would be 6, I think, in a row that he's lost. His side's been defeated while conceding at least 4 goals in the last 5 matches against Liverpool as well. He does not like the sight of Liverpool, and the betting suggests that we could see a hatful more goals from the Reds as well. Anything else to add from either of you?
I just can't wait to speak to my colleague in Euros to let him know that Dan McGavin doesn't think he knows what he's doing. He'll be delighted with that one. He's a big fan of yours, Derek.
I'll bet, yeah.
There will be goals in this. I mean, I'm looking, if I was on a correct score, it'd be 3-1.
Okay. 3-1 to Liverpool, just by the way, just for point of reference with the price, is 9-1, which looks fairly tempting. Liverpool to win in over 2.5 goals. The trader's very much onto that. That is 4-9, so still heavily odds on. But then again, Liverpool are a short price at 3-20 at the time of recording this. So that's a little bit of a look ahead to the Saturday television games. We'll be moving on to Sundays in just a moment. But first of all, let's have a little glance across Europe and get the European nap.
We've got a cracker to look forward to on the Euro front on Saturday tea time in Germany, as Borussia Mönchengladbach host Leverkusen. There tends to be goals in this fixture, and though Leverkusen have got a poor recent record against Gladbach, the record over the last 10, 15 years or so is superb. I'm going to take the outright out of it, though. I think there'll be loads of goals, and Gladbach won 11-1 in the Cup last week. I can't see that happening again. But one market I do like is both teams to score in the second half. It's 13-8, and that's the Euro nap from me this week.
Right then, fellas, on to Sunday's action. Watford against Crystal Palace is where we start, a 1:30 p.m. kickoff. And Watford are 6-4. The draw is 23-10. Crystal Palace are 9-5. Watford are 2 out of 2 this season. Always seem to start well at the start of Premier League campaigns before they kind of fall away. It's usually when they're safe, they kind of stop playing a little bit. Crystal Palace's start has been steady, and they showed signs against Liverpool that they're going to be quite a hard side to beat. So, Derek, which way would you lean in this?
Oh, God. A draw will suit both sides, I think, and more importantly, it will suit me. It's finished 0-0 last season, finished 1-1 the season before. It's the biggest price of the three. I can see no reason why it won't finish well square. But, you know, that will be the result that both squads will go away happy with. I'll tell you what, there's one player I look at in this fixture, and there's certain players in the Premier League over the years, and I've banged my head against the wall when I look at them and watch them and think of them, because they get great press, and I see that. I think, well, they're a myth, absolute myth. Balotelli was one of them. Mesut Ozil is definitely one of them. And Christian Benteke is another one. Even when he was scoring goals for Villa, even when he signed for Liverpool for massive money, I'm thinking, what is it that this guy has got? The answer is nothing. And I just wonder how he can still be getting a game for Palace week after week when he's looking like an amateur. He's been a passenger for so long that when asked by a Palace fan what his favourite position was, he said an aisle seat. That's how long he's been a passenger. I can't believe this guy is making a living as a Premier League footballer. And yet every time you look at Palace, you look at the Palace team sheet before a game, you see Benteke's name on it. And he never gets taken off either. I just do not understand what Premier League managers see in that bloke. Anyway, that's off my chest. This game will finish in a draw.
I'm gonna probably poke the bear a little bit here, but saying, you know, when players talk about playing with Emil Heskey, and he got a lot of flack, but he's great to play with because he'll help the striker that's playing with him in terms of holding the ball up, being a physical presence, taking a man with him. Is it similar with Benteke?
No, Emil Heskey. If Benteke ever dreamed of being as good as Heskey, he'd have to wake up and apologise. Heskey was a tremendous player. he really was. And I remember him playing Man United off the park a few times on his own in a Liverpool shirt. No, Benteke's not in the same league.
Fair enough. Expecting a draw then, Derek, here. What about yourself, Andy? How would you see this one going?
Well, that's got to be the McGovern weekly rant over and done with, I think.
Oh, no, there's a few more.
Go on, shock me. No, it's got to be a close game. I mean, Palace, in the second half of last season, outside of the major teams, as it were the team of the season. They, you know, after that awful start under De Boer, they really did recover. And I know how much Derek's a huge fan of Roy. But I mean, they've been off to a decent start this season. They played decently against Liverpool. If I'm going to edge it one way, it would be Palace here, but there can't be more than a goal in it either way.
Yeah, just going back to that point, I'm sure you'll agree with what he was saying there, Derek, because given how bad Palace were before Roy Hodgson took over, and we know what he did at Liverpool, you're number one fan, aren't you, for Roy Hodgson?
Again, he's another myth, you know, a managerial myth, this guy. The darkest days that Liverpool have had, they've had a few dark days over the last, 20 years or so, but there's none as dark as when he was manager. And he wrecked England as well. The guy is an absolute myth. He went to Palace and did well. He took over after they'd gone 7 games, I think, without scoring, without a point. But you look at that squad, and it was never going to be in trouble. Even no points after 7 games, I'd have gone in and rescued them. And he took them really where the squad deserved to be, you know, because they've got a very good squad there. So no, don't be praising Roy Hodgson with an earshot of moi.
I just want to ask both of you as well. Either of you got an opinion on the whole Wilfred Zaha thing? He's playing well. There was talk of him possibly leaving Crystal Palace. Then he signed a new deal. He says he's happy there. Is he going to be the main man for Palace this year?
Yeah, he's brilliant, Zaha. I can't believe he's signed long term at Palace. It makes me wonder what other clubs are thinking. Are they worrying that when he went to Man United, he wasn't up to scratch? He was a young man then. He's in the prime now. He's got absolutely everything. And I can't believe big clubs haven't been in for him. I'd be delighted if Liverpool went for him, but obviously it's not going to happen. But yeah, I just don't understand why he's sticking at Palace.
He's 21-10 to score any time in this particular game, by the way. And he's also featured on the enhanced odds if you're siding with Palace. Zaha to score and Palace to win is 9-2 out to 5-1 on there. So we think it'll be pretty tight, then, the overriding opinion here. It's going to be quite an attritional start to Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I don't think anybody north of the Watford gaff will be tuning in for this one. We're more likely down the pub or off to get a loaf of Hovis.
OK. moving on to the 4 o'clock kickoff in the Premier League then. And I dare say this one is a little bit more potentially enticing for the neutral viewer. Newcastle 4-1 in the betting at home to Chelsea, who are 4-6. And the draw is 11-4. Newcastle have a good record at home against Chelsea for whatever reason, Andy. Chelsea don't like going to St James's Park.
No, they don't. And Newcastle are always decent at home, and I fancy them in this game, to be honest. I've been quite anti-Chelsea for quite a while, and even under the new manager, I don't see an awful lot there. I know they've got off to a reasonable start, but I think Newcastle can get a result here, and I think they'll win.
You think they'll win, yeah? 4-1 is the price of them as well. What do you make of Chelsea on the flip side then? You say you've been taking them on, or you're not happy to side with them in recent weeks. Are you not convinced by them under Sarri? They seem to be playing an attacking brand of football, and they've won both games so far.
Yeah, they've made a decent start, but I just still think the underlying thing there isn't quite right. And it was horrible last season under Conte there, because you knew it was all falling apart. And I just worry that behind the scenes everything's not right there, and I can still see during the season the cracks reappearing. And I don't think away at Newcastle is one they'd particularly be looking forward to. So, as I say, at the prices, I would fancy Newcastle here.
Yeah, Newcastle have won 4 of the last 5 Premier League home matches against Chelsea, recently doing so at the back end of last season when winning 3-0, the final day of last season, of course. They drew the other encounter. That's some home record against a side that have been champions in that time, Derek.
Yeah, you're right. Newcastle have met Chelsea when Chelsea were in the pomp and still done a job on them. And Chelsea are far from the pomp now. You mentioned they've won 2 games. One was against Huddersfield, one of the worst teams I've ever seen in the Premier League. And the other one was against Arsenal, who were even worse. 4-1 is a tremendous price for Newcastle. I know they weren't great at Cardiff last week. It was a dire game, but they could have won. And they could have won in that last minute penalty. Kennedy missed the penalty. He had a nightmare. Kennedy, did you watch that game last week, the Cardiff Newcastle game?
Absolute shocker, wasn't it?
He lost his confidence. He lost his head. He's even lost that N from his name. How annoying is that spelling of his name, Kennedy with one N? Does my nothing. How did they let him take the penalty after a game like that, when his confidence must be shot to pieces? How can you let a player in that position take a penalty? Oh, Rafa, what did you do there? I like Newcastle here. I thought it was just too big to beat the Chelsea side, who have not convinced yet. They haven't, despite the 2 wins from 2. I agree with Andy. There's still something not quite right there. 4-1, I'm all over it.
Yeah, okay, 4-1, Newcastle, a selection for both sides. Kennedy can't play here, by the way, just in case it wasn't mentioned there, I didn't quite hear. He's on loan from Chelsea, so he's not allowed to play against his parent club, so we won't see any of that horror show this weekend, so he'll just get to watch from the stands. You both mentioned Chelsea there in a bit of detail as well. We've kind of seen Jekyll and Hyde of Chelsea that we've seen over the past few years already this season. They look really good going forward, and at times you think, actually, Chelsea are all right. And then in the Arsenal game, when they had a 10-minute spell where they didn't know how to play football for 10 minutes, they looked like they were going to get overrun, and they had a real wobble, and that wobble seems to be in Chelsea somehow. The players seem to have that in them. Is that going to be rectified under Sarri? You both think they're going to get beat this weekend, so is that still going to be an issue for them this season, do you think?
I don't see him being contenders for the title. I think that there's about 3 or 4 teams going to be playing for the minor spots, and I'd put them in that bracket.
Okay, what's the thoughts with the Eden Hazard thing as well at Chelsea? Either of you, we'll come to you, Derek, because he didn't start, did he, last week? And there's talk of him going to Real Madrid every summer. And when we watch him at the World Cup, and he looks a brilliant player, he's not. He comes on for Chelsea at the weekend and he played well, actually, but he's not quite doing that week in, week out for Chelsea. Is there a problem there with him?
Well, yeah, I mean, when there's a problem with Hazard, you can see there was a problem with him in the second season under Mourinho, and he never tried the leg, did he? He went from player of the season, probably player, the best player in Europe almost after Messi, to you know, being not the best player in my Sunday league team. He was absolutely awful. And when he downs tools, he really does down tools. I'm not saying he's done that now. I mean, we've got to see a lot more evidence. And, he's come back from the World Cup, probably knackered, needs a bit of a break. But if Chelsea are ever going to do anything, they need him at his best, because what a player he is at his best. But you can never bank on it, can you, with a Hazard? I don't know. There's something not quite right. It's just one of the many things that you get funny signs from Chelsea. I agree with Andy. I don't think I can't see them finishing in the top four. Is going to be hard for them to get into this season.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people think that as well. There was people not happy with Monday Night Football on Sky last week because they weren't considering Chelsea in the top four. But I think that is where they're at myself as well. Anyway, we've talked about that game long enough. Newcastle, the bet then, so it could be a bit of value for you listeners this weekend. We're heading to Monday Night's football next. Manchester United against Tottenham. Man U are 6-4. The draw is 12-5, and Tottenham are 17-10. Andy, we'll come to you first here. It's quite an open betting heat. Manchester United have a very, very good home record against Tottenham Hotspur, who just cannot seem to turn up at Old Trafford for some time now. But there's all kinds of things going on behind the scenes at Manchester United. Could you back them here at 6-4?
No, is the honest answer. But then again, I'm just continuing the theme all through last season. I didn't think it was, even though they got the results last season, he's not the right man for that job. I've said it all the way along, and I just see it gradually disintegrating. And I don't, like you say, Tottenham's record there is awful, but I think they might win this one. I really do think United are going in the wrong direction fast. I think Tottenham can get something here. I think they're playing the better football at the time, so at this moment in time. So past record means very little at the moment, I think, at the moment, and that applies to Mourinho as well.
26 Premier League encounters at Old Trafford. Tottenham have only won two of them. We'll let you get stuck into Manchester United in a little bit more detail later on, Derek, because we're going to have a little chat about that with our FWA guest. But in terms of this match on Monday night, how would you play it as a betting angle?
Well, you mentioned that Spurs don't have a great record at Old Trafford, but I remember making them the best of the day, a better the weekend one week on the podcast a few years ago, 5-1, and they won. I think they won 1-0 that day. And now they're only, what did you say, 17-10, something like that?
Yeah.
So you happen to swallow a much shorter price, but with good reason, because you know they've been doing it for the last three seasons. Tottenham, the only team I mentioned last week, the only team in of the top six to have finished in the top three seasons running. Quite remarkable that. Man United, I mean, if anyone looking to back United after what they witnessed in Brighton, at Brighton last week, well, there's a website you need, gamcare.org.uk, because that would be a terrible bet. Half the team looked like they'd never played together before. The other half looked like they'd never played football before. It was absolutely atrocious performance, and that's a team not playing for the manager, without question. It wasn't just a one-off. That's a team that I want the manager gone. The manager has gone, in my eyes. He'd gone a lot many years ago. I think Spurs are good things here.
Yeah, I kind of agree with both of you. I think that Spurs are the bet here, but just in the back of my mind, there's that nagging thing that Manchester United are good at home. Under Mourinho, he's got a very good home record regardless of where he goes, and things just tend to repeat themselves in football. And Manchester United, well, they just seem to find a way of either winning ugly or just getting the job done in these kind of things that keep reoccurring, and that just puts that element of doubt in my mind.
Well, the reason I've been loath to back against United in the last 18 months or so in matches like this is that they've got Pogba, who I think is a tremendous footballer. I mean, you know, he hasn't got a weakness in this game, Pogba. But I've watched him recently, and the last two games, and he's not interested. He's not playing for the manager. And I think when he's not on his game, United are absolutely mid-table. I just can't see anything other than a Spurs win.
Okay, Spurs win, and we could put that with the Harry Kane angle as well. Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win is 14-5. That's out to 3-1 now. I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in that enhanced odds, given that he's got the August monkey off his back, and given the way that Manchester United defended against Brighton. Surely Harry Kane is rubbing his hands at the prospect of taking on that defence this weekend. What do you reckon, Andy?
You think so. You'd think so, wouldn't you? That's what I say. I mean, Derek says Paul Pogba hasn't got a weakness in his game. He has. He's got a weakness between his two ears. It's just whether he wants to or not. Is you can't be a professional sportsman and aim to be at the very top level and just turn up when you want to. That's his problem. There's no doubt in ability-wise, really, but his problem's between his ears and trying to get somebody to change their mentality is not what Mourinho's particularly good at. So, I don't think they're getting the best out of him, and without him, like Derek says, they can be rank average. So, yeah, I can only be with Tottenham. Okay, which is a double bonus for me, because if I jinx it, then I'm happy anyway.
That's a staunch Arsenal fan, Andy XL there, on the thoughts of Tottenham's fortunes this weekend. Should we do naps, fellas? Should we get best bets for the weekend then? Do you want to go first here, Derek? What's the nap for you this week?
Well, I was going to be all over Fulham on Sunday at home to Burnley, but they're only evens, and I expected more than that. It's a bit tight, so I'm going to go on Saturday match, 3 o'clock kick-off. Leicester, 21-10 to win at Southampton.
Okay, Leicester to win at Southampton. Andy, what would you go with as the best bet?
Similar thoughts about Fulham. Burnley doing this Thursday-Sunday thing isn't doing them any favours. They've had an extra time and then played half an hour, 10 men. So Fulham are not a bad price there, but probably not good enough to make naps. So I'll go with the Newcastle one at home to Chelsea at 4-1.
Okay, Newcastle 4-1 at home to Chelsea is the nap selection for Andy then. And now I'm supposed to fill in for DK. So part of me wants to put in a ridiculous nap so he has a loser. And a part of me wants to put in a very short one so that I don't cost him anything as well. So I'm kind of in a bit of a quandary here. I think Liverpool will win and win easy, but they're 3-20, so you can't possibly side with them. I'm going to put Bournemouth to beat Everton at 6-4. Bournemouth very good at home, play decent football. I'm not entirely convinced by Everton just yet. I think they've still seen signs that there are a little bit of defensive issues at the back there for the Toffees. And I'm also convinced that Richarlison's not suddenly a brilliant player despite his £50 million price tag and scoring 3 goals so far. So I think Bournemouth might be a decent bet there at 6-4. Either of you going to ridicule me for that?
No, Bournemouth wouldn't have been in. If I was having a four-timer on the Premier League on Saturday, Bournemouth would be in it.
I'll very much support your comments about Richarlison. That's the worst £50 million that's ever been spent.
Everyone was like that, weren't they? Oh, what a waste of money. And then he's scored 3 in 2 games. So he's proving the doubters wrong so far. But I'm yet to be convinced that it'll continue. Well, thank you very much, fellas. Been a pleasure as always. Great stuff. And enjoy the action this week.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Check out the all-new Bet Boosts on your sports Accas. You can boost trebles and bigger with a maximum stake of £20. You get one every day on mobile or the new WilliamHill.com site. Just click the boost button on your bet slip.
Now, moving on to the section of the podcast where we're joined by a guest from the FWA. Derek is still on the line with us, and we're joined by football editor at the Daily Mail, Ian Ladyman. How are you, Ian?
Very well, mate. Thank you. Very well.
Good, man. You've done a lot of talking about Manchester United in the media. We're going to talk about some of the things you've said as well recently. It is interesting, isn't it? Because they are the most successful league club in English football. They've finished in the Champions League places last season. They've got a real great squad of players, but seemingly all is not well at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I mean, you've always got to view these things in the context of the club that you're talking about. And, Manchester United finished second last year. They reached the FA Cup final. They've won one game out of two this year. But, you know, United have such high standards in terms of what they expect in terms of results and performances that it doesn't take much for the criticism to start. And it isn't really so much what's going on the field at the moment at United that's so intriguing. It's what's happening off the field in terms of Jose Mourinho's relationship with his chief executive, Ed Woodward, the Paul Pogba situation. All these things kind of add up to make uncomfortable viewing and listening for United supporters at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Derek is you're obviously not a United supporter. Looking in from the outside, if you like, it does look a bit of a mess, doesn't it? When Ed Woodward, Jose Mourinho, and Paul Pogba are seemingly all at loggerheads. You've got agents getting involved, previous players getting involved. It's all just a bit of a media storm around a pretty bad going on at Manchester United.
Well, yeah, and it all revolves around a manager who should be the most delighted figure in football to be managing a club like that. And yet he's nothing but a sourpuss. He's, he's in danger of becoming a more highly paid Steve McLaren as Jose Mourinho. I can't think of a decline so dramatic. Not even Brigitte Bardot's. He's yesterday's man, and the longer he stays at the club, I just can't see United getting out of this tailspin. The performance against Brighton. The thing about that performance, it was from Man United standards, it was diabolical, and yet almost it was not unexpected. Players he's paid big money for in midfield. The midfield was non-existent, missing presumed thread, as I like to say about it. It was absolutely diabolical, and I can't see how United are going to get out of the trouble they're in. But he's not without support, Jose Mourinho. 84% reportedly backing him to stay on as a United boss. That was according to a survey of the COP.
That's interesting, really, because a lot of talk of about Jose Mourinho and his difficult third season syndrome, that seems to keep coming up. Questions about whether he'll be in charge at Old Trafford next season or even the remainder of this. Do you think he will walk? Do you think he'll leave at some point, or he'll be sacked here, Ian?
It's really difficult to say because United, for example, I would expect United to finish in the top four simply because they've got some very, very good players. And there is still a gap in quality, certainly beyond kind of, the fifth and sixth position down to the rest of the Premier League. So every chance he finishes in the top four, Manchester United may see that as okay. Finishing the Champions League positions, having a cup run. Equally, if Mourinho continues to kind of talk the way he's talking and his demeanour continues to be as downbeat as it has been, then I could also see it going the other way. I know that's sitting on the fence a little bit. But what I would say is it's certainly not beyond the realms of possibility that Mourinho will not see out the season at Manchester United. As Derek hinted out there, it's not just what's happening on the field. It's the way that Mourinho is carrying himself off the field. The things that he has said. He wasn't particularly complimentary about United's pre-season, even suggesting that supporters shouldn't bother coming to watch them. That's the type of comment that will go down like a lead balloon with the Glazer family, for example, when you're trying to fill stadiums on a tour abroad. So a lot of it is down to him. It's down to whether he can pick himself up, try and pick his players up, start talking like he's enjoying himself, start talking like he wants to be Manchester United manager, start talking like he believes in his players. A lot of it at the moment is coming from him. The messages are wrong. If he can turn those messages around, then he might find that some of his players start playing like Manchester United players again.
I think you used a word that I was going to bring up myself. You mentioned demeanour in there, Ian. There's been comparisons with Sir Alex Ferguson. Mourinho looks a miserable man. He looks under pressure. I read your article in the Daily Mail as well, saying that Mourinho's locked in a contest he can't win, and he has the demeanour of a man who's been taken hostage. That's the thing with Mourinho, isn't it? It's like, in the days where he's doing well at places, he's got this special one attitude. He's great fun to watch. He gets his players rallying around him. It's the absolute opposite at Old Trafford. He looks sullen, he looks miserable, and the players aren't playing for him at the moment.
No, and this is my theory, and I will stress it is a theory. Nobody's told me this, but I began to think this last season, midway through last season, as Manchester City started to disappear into the distance, and that this belief of mine has hardened over the summer. I think that Mourinho knows deep down, either consciously or subconsciously, that this Manchester United team cannot compete with Manchester City. And when I say compete, I don't mean in one game. I mean over the course of a season. They can't catch them. They're not good enough. City are quite significantly superior. And Mourinho is not built to finish second. Mourinho is a winner. He's been a winner all his managerial career. He's not Jurgen Klopp, who thinks he might think finishing fourth, getting to the Champions League final is a sign of progress. Mourinho doesn't work that way. He doesn't work like Richard Pochettino, who thinks it's okay, we haven't won a trophy yet, but as long as we keep getting better, we might win one day. His mind doesn't work like that. His mind is programmed to win. And I think he knows at the moment that he can't win for the first time in his career. He's in a situation in a city where he's essentially programmed to come second, and he can't cope with that. And I think that deep down is what is bugging him. I think that's what's behind his behaviour. I think it's behind the way he looks, the way he feels, the way he behaves. And I think that if anything, that is what will continue to impact negatively on United's performances. And I think ultimately is what will drive him out of Old Trafford and into another job where he thinks he can start winning again.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. What do you make of that, Derek? The fact that he knows that he can't get the better of Manchester United, Manchester City at the moment with Manchester United. Is that the thing that's causing all the problems for Mourinho?
It could be, yeah. I mean, you're right, he is used to winning. And winning trinkets like the FA Cup and that doesn't cut the mustard for him. But his only alternative then is get the hell out of Dodge, leave England because City are there to stay. I think there's more to it than that. I think his style of football is yesterday's football. Doesn't work in today's game. He was the special one. He's now the special ones. Odds on to be out of a job by Christmas, I've seen prices floating around this week, and that wouldn't be the worst bet in the world. Because quite clearly, the players aren't playing for them now, in particular Paul Pogba. You say, well, hang on, how can that happen? These players are highly paid. Once they're out on the pitch, you should forget who they're playing for. Turn it on for the team, for the fans. But we've seen that before with Mourinho. Eden Hazard did exactly the same, down tools under his final season at Chelsea. And Pogba is playing the same way. He'll go. I'll be amazed if he's still in that job by the end of the season.
Interesting. Next Premier League manager to leave, by the way, Jose Mourinho, 11-4 favourite in that market, which speaks quite volumes, as well as the fact that we've priced up a next permanent Manchester United market as well, where Zinedine Zidane is currently the 7-4 favourite. Pochettino is 13-2, Ryan Giggs 12-1, Laurent Blanc 14s, 16s or bigger prices for the remainder. And you mentioned Paul Pogba in there as well, Derek. His club after the summer transfer window to stay at Man United is 1-9. Barcelona, who came knocking in the recent transfer window, 5-1. Juventus 12s, Real Madrid 25s and PSG 33-1. What do you make of the Pogba situation, Ian? Do you think he has stopped playing for Jose Mourinho? Is it the fact that the spotlight's on him and a team that isn't performing? Is that part of it as well? Or what do you make of the whole Pogba, is he a flop? Is he the man to lead Manchester United forward in midfield?
Well, answer the first question first, which was, no, I don't think it's down to us. We're only 2 days into the season. He scored the winning goal, albeit a penalty, in the first game of the season. He had a very poor game at Brighton, don't get me wrong. A really, really poor game at Brighton. Spent most of it passing the ball to people in the crowd, from what I could see. But there's no suggestion he was doing that because he didn't care or doing that on purpose. I do think that he needs to feel a bit of love. Now, we can sit here and argue all day about whether highly paid footballers should need to feel a bit of love in order to perform. The rest of us just get on with our jobs day to day. Regardless, maybe footballers should be the same, but they're not all the same. And I think at the moment, he needs to feel a bit of love. And I think it was a very telling moment when United went on pre-season tour just after the World Cup finished. I think they actually flew out to America the day of the World Cup final. That was the day that Paul Pogba was scoring a goal from the World Cup final, lifting the trophy. Best day of his career, probably. And the first thing that Mourinho says in America on tour when he's asked about Pogba, he's given a real open goal, Mourinho, just to say something nice about Pogba, to maybe try and get his relationship with Pogba off on the right foot for the new season. And he doesn't say that. He doesn't take the open goal. He says, well, you know, maybe a World Cup is a better environment for him because he's more focused. Maybe there's nothing to distract him. Maybe in the Premier League it's harder to keep that focus. So essentially, by implication there, he's criticising him. Instead of paying him a simple compliment and saying he's had a great World Cup, let's hope he can bring that form back to United, he essentially criticises him. And Pogba noticed that. Of course he noticed that. It was all over the internet. It was all over the newspapers. It was all over the television. Of course Pogba noticed that. He's not forgotten that. He decided that his relationship with Mourinho was one that maybe isn't to be solved. His agent on behalf of Pogba's instructions has been maybe having a look at getting him to Barcelona. The one thing that Pogba didn't need after all that, of course, is for his agents to come out this week and start to get mouthy on Twitter. Now, that didn't help. That was a not responsible behaviour by the agent, but it's happened. There's no suggestion that Pogba kind of, you know, was behind what Mino Raiola says, but he is his agent. He does represent him. So that relationship's a bit messy at the moment. It's like all manager-player relationships. Probably could be sorted out, but at the moment it needs to be sorted out quickly, because if Manchester United haven't got the best players playing for them in terms of, you know, performing for them, then what chance have they got?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen them already, do have a look on Twitter for Pogba's agent Raiola's comments about Paul Scholes and such, because that's just muddied the waters even further. Quite an interesting read, if nothing else. I just want to bring up a point as well. I watched you on a clip from Five Live as well there, Ian, and you talk about Pogba there and whether he's getting the best out of him. You talk about the fact that Mourinho doesn't seem to be improving his players as well compared to other managers. I thought that was quite interesting as well. You know, if you look at the likes of Klopp and what he's done at Liverpool, you look at the likes of what Pochettino's doing at Spurs, and you look at what Pep's done at City, you're seeing players that were a little bit raw that could be better playing better, and you've got Manchester United where they just seem a little bit stale and maybe even going backwards in some cases.
Yeah, the point I was making on that clip, which wasn't clear on the clip because of the way the clip was clipped, if you know what I mean. You didn't see the wider context of the point I was making. What I was actually saying on the radio was that I was talking about Mourinho's unhappiness that Ed Woodward hadn't bought in the extra players that he wanted this season, and how United supporters now seem to be pointing the finger of blame at Woodward rather than Mourinho. What I was trying to say was that it's not unusual for football managers to get to the end of a transfer window not having been given all the players he wants. It's been happening since the dawn of time. And what I was saying was, instead of moaning about it and cursing his bad luck, Mourinho would do himself a favour to get his boots muddy, get on the training ground and start to work with the players that he's got, because that is part of his job as well. Those two centre-halves that he spent all summer saying aren't good enough by implication because he wants to buy another one, those two centre-halves he bought. So it's up to him now to improve those players if those are the players that he's left with. And that was a point I was making. How many current United players has Jose Mourinho improved? When he was at Chelsea, he improved a heck of a lot of players first time round. So many I won't list them. At United, how many of his current squad is he improving as a coach? Because that's part of his job as well. It's not just about buying players. You're a coach. Coach the players. Make them better. Klopp has done that with players at Liverpool. Guardiola has done that with players at Manchester City. Pochettino has done that with players at Tottenham. Mourinho has maybe done it with a couple of players at Manchester United, but not enough. And now it's time to start, because these are the players that he's got.
Yeah, one player stands out to me there, and that's Lingard. I think he's a better player now than he was.
Yeah.
What do you make of it, Derek? Can you think of any that spring to mind off the top of your head? It is quite hard to just throw a lot of names out there, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's not just Man United. It's the last five or six jobs, they haven't improved a single player. In fact, players have significantly declined under his stewardship. It's not a coincidence. This is the trend, and he's yesterday's man. I suppose in a way we shouldn't expect him to coach players to be better. Maybe it was a fluke at Chelsea first time around. This is a guy who started off as an interpreter. You know, so why should he be some super coach? All right, he should have picked up a few tricks over the last few years, but whatever they are, they've disappeared. I just think, I used to love Jose Mourinho. When he managed Porto to win the Champions League, I'd backed him at 50-1. I had a picture of him on my wall. Absolutely made up with him, but he's yesterday's man. He does not cut it. And the way football is now, he can't hack it.
Just going to throw the other side of the argument into it a little bit as well. As a club, Manchester United, you know, there's a lot of talk of the negativity there, but you know, they've got more sponsorship deals than I think anybody else. They run as a business. They're the richest club in the world. I think, bizarrely, over the transfer window, they signed more sponsorship deals than they did players. As a business, there's no one better at that, is there, Ian?
No, there isn't. And this was another topic that was raised when I was on the radio the other night, and I took issue with it a little bit, because there's this insinuation in football, that in modern football, that making money is a bad thing, when in fact, if you don't make money, you cannot buy players. You've got to make money. Manchester United are brilliant at making money, and they should not apologise for that. They should not apologise for that. Their setup, if you forget about the ownership and the money that's been sucked out of the club by the ownership, the actual setup at Manchester United to make money is second to none in the world, unless maybe you talk about Real Madrid, but certainly second to none in this country. It's the type of setup that a club like Liverpool, for example, you got left behind, by the way, in the 80s and 90s, when the commercial kind of boom was happening in English football and was being led by Manchester United. It's the type of commercial operation, the type of money-making operation that a club like Liverpool, for example, and a club like Arsenal, and certainly prior to takeover, a club like Manchester City, could only dream of having. Now, so they're very, very good at that, and they should not apologise for that. What they haven't been very good at in recent times, since Alex Ferguson retired, and you could argue actually for a couple of seasons before he retired, what they haven't been very good at is spending that money on players. That's where the mistake has lain. They haven't bought the right players. They've spent a load of money. They've spent a load of money in the year in the post-Ferguson era, and on the whole, they've not spent it very well. So every football club needs to make money because they all need to spend money. But when you've got it, you've got to spend it better than they have.
Yeah, Derek, if they've got this constant income and this constant stream of, you know, they're never going to be, oh, we can't afford to buy a player. Is it just a matter of time before they catch City? Could things still go right for Mourinho? Is there still light at the end of the tunnel?
No, I don't think the best players will go to Man United while he's in charge. Pure and simple. Why would you go there when you can go to and play for Pep Guardiola or Barcelona?
Sanchez did, Derek, and he went because they paid him more money. You know what I mean?
Who's that?
He could have gone to Alexis Sanchez. You know, he was supposed to go to City, and obviously you and I both know he would have been better off at City. He'd have a Premier League winner's medal by now for a start. And he went to United, so, you know, because they paid him more. So I take your point, but it can happen. Some players still will follow the money, you know what I mean?
I just tried to put an interesting spin on it, a positive spin on it there, because it's well been very negative, and being a dyed-in-the-wool Leeds United fan, that was very hard for me to do, and it got shut down anyway, so...
The thing about making money off the field is, I'm a football fan, always have been. I don't care who owns my club, I don't care who's in the boardroom, who the chairman is. Bugger off, I'm not interested in you. I'm interested in the manager and the players. Remember years ago in the 70s, 80s, we didn't know a single chairman. I think Bob Lord in the 60s about the only chairman we ever knew about. And now they're in the headlines more than the players. It's ridiculous.
Just to finish off with a little bit of betting talk, in terms of Monday night's game, Ian, against Spurs, is it, given Manchester United's brilliant home record against Tottenham, is that a good chance for them to silence the critics?
Yes, it is. Tottenham still haven't found a formula to perform well in big games. Big problem for Pochettino. Mourinho, somehow, by hook or by crook, still can manage to drag performances out of teams in big games, even if they are just spoiling performances or performances to nick a 1-0 or a 0-0. He can do it. That stubbornness does remain in Mourinho. So it would not surprise me at all if Manchester United beat Tottenham on Monday night.
And those of you that have been listening all the way through, you'll know Derek is siding with Spurs on Monday night. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Real interesting stuff there, guys. Good luck and enjoy the action this weekend.
Thank you, mate. Cheers. Bye.
So the lowdown on the trials and tribulations going on at Old Trafford at the moment. Then interesting stuff coming out of Manchester United over the last few weeks, of course. And we'll see how it pans out and see what result they get on Monday night. Let's turn our attention away from Manchester United and the Premier League now. And we'll look ahead to some of the action coming up in the Football League. We've got Pete, Gav and Al giving us their best bets.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and for my championship nap this weekend, I'm doing something that on paper looks incredibly obvious. QPR have struggled like you would not believe and beyond so far this season. They have no philosophy, keep making loads of individual mistakes, and seem to have absolutely zero confidence. And who can blame them? The championship form so far this season has read loss, loss, 7-1 loss, and loss 3-0, of course, midweek to Bristol City. They're taking on a Wigan side who've adapted to life back in the Championship very well. Two wins, a draw and a narrow loss in an epic against Aston Villa will mean Paul Cook will be very, very happy indeed, as he will be travelling to QPR when they are in the form that they are in. 7-5 for Wigan will not be the price come 3 o'clock on Saturday. Of that, I am absolutely positive, so back it as soon as you possibly can. But for me, the championship nap of the week is Wigan at 7-5. Let's hear from an informed Gav Puszczalowski and his thoughts on League One.
Sides and prices I fancy in League One this weekend. Sunderland seem nice at 21-20 to win away at Wimbledon. Oh, so close to being my nap. I like Peterborough at 6-4 away at Plymouth. If I wanted to play my nap safely this weekend, Luton at 7-10 at home to Shrewsbury seems very nice. But my nap is a side who's already landed for me this season, and that is Gillingham at 29-20 at home to Coventry. It's a price I cannot ignore. Coventry, for me, quite poor this season, not enough goals in their side. Coventry's two previous away games this season, haven't scored a single goal. They lost midweek to Blackpool as well and were battered in that match. I know Gillingham lost at home to Sunderland 4-1 on Wednesday. They took the lead in that one, Gillingham, after minute three, but Sunderland equalised minute four and ran away with the game. But Gillingham before that at home, winning and scoring plenty. Tom Eaves for Gillingham has scored six goals in his last three games at home for Gillingham, bearing in mind that Coventry are yet to score away from home at all. And that is why I cannot ignore Gillingham at 29-20. It is too big, because this is a place where Coventry, for me, will struggle and struggle seriously. So I'm all over Gillingham as my NAP selection at 29-20 to beat the Sky Blues. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Before the season, a lot of people would have expected Exeter, Lincoln, Stevenage, MK Dons, Carlisle and Swindon to be top seven, and they are. But if there's one in the elite pack that's surprising, it's Colchester. Unbeaten in all four games, third in the table, winning both of their home games, 2-0 and 6-0. Their other two games, away draws at pre-season title favourites Notts County and at another much-fancied team, Mansfield. And it's another big club, bigger club, they play this weekend, Northampton. But Northampton have to come to them. And they haven't won a game yet this season. 2 points from four games, handing Morecambe their first points of the season in midweek. That is not the sign of a team in form. And by the way, Morecambe deserved to beat Northampton 1-0, despite the fact they ended with 10 men. The price is surely here based on reputation, because this is a side that is both the league's highest scorers and its best defence, despite a tricky opening fixture list, who are at home and odds against a winless side who've really struggled to adapt after relegation. A no-brainer, simple outright this week. It is Colchester 5-4.
There you go then, best bets in the Football League. We've had plenty of chat about the Premier League as well. And that is it for this week's Punt Podcast. Been a pleasure as always. Very best of luck with your bets this weekend as well. Do check out the Bet Boost on the William Hill site as well. If you're building your accumulators, you can press the boost button on your Accas and just watch the price get bigger. Do check out Scratch of the Day as well. Plenty of prizes to be won along the way. Hashtag your odds to at William Hill if you fancy anything that's not priced up. They'll try and price that up and get that on the website for you as well. And do check out plenty of enhanced odds along the way at williamhill.com. Thank you very much for listening and enjoy this weekend's football.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.